I'll tell you what, weather-wise this weekend, you couldn't ask for anything more.
No.
Oh, my goodness. It was absolutely – like, Bill Keenest, I'm not joking. If you wanted to – Sean, what is your favorite type of weather? Give me this weekend that we had here. You had some rain. You had some nice, crisp air. It was absolutely, positively beautiful this weekend.
It was. I mean, Friday night lights for all the high school teams and the fans that attended those games was exquisite. I mean, it was football, football, football weather. And yesterday was beautiful. And today got a little rain while everybody was watching the Lions game anyway. So,
hey, well, you know what? At least the weather was good. So many of our teams, not so good this weekend. It really was one of those weekends. And, you know, obviously that's what we're doing here on Gridiron Wrap. We're talking about football and the history of football. It's so funny, Bill, because you and I have known each other for a long time. And you know this about me. I am somebody, and I guess I'm rare in the media business. Look, I have no qualms telling you, I love the Detroit Lions, okay? I do. I have a job to do, and sometimes that job means that you get frustrated because, you know, you're doing your job, and you're a fan, and you get frustrated and things like that. And the days of me losing my mind after a game and getting crabby and all that stuff are so long gone. It's Bill, I don't know if I ever told you this, probably 15, 16 years ago, one of those games, and I remember my son kind of looking at me like, Dad's going to lose his mind. Dad's going to lose his mind. And I was like, it's not going to happen. It's not, you know, and it was like, okay, no more. I can't do that. You grow up and all that stuff. But with all that being said, today was one of those woulda, coulda, shoulda, didn't. And I just my personal opinion, I think those losses hurt more against our divisional rivals.
There's no question, Sean. Losses in general, I always believed, shared this opinion, and lived it. The depths of defeat are far greater than the heights of victory. A little dramatic there, but it's true. You know, when a loss just stays with you, it doesn't leave you. When you win, you're almost relieved. Okay, whew, we won. Let's go. But a loss, especially a loss, they're all the same. They only count for one. We get that. But that was gut-wrenching today for the Lions. And it's going to be another case of just like what Michigan State finds itself in a different way. But, okay, how do we deal with this, and how do we turn things around? Because they pay the other players on the other teams. They don't care. They could care less what kind of loss you had. They could care less if you won or lost. So, it was a gut-wrencher. It was a tough one.
You know what's interesting, Bill? Much like we were just talking about with Chris Renwick, which if you haven't listened, Chris does a fantastic job. Make sure you give him a listen on Sports Wrap every Sunday night at 6 o'clock. To me, Bill, this is a little bit like what we were talking about in regards to Michigan State. A lot of times fans are victims of their own expectations. I mean by that is, if you were one of those guys that thought this was going to be the year, this was going to be 2011 redo, or this was going to be, dare I say, 1991, whatever the case may be, maybe that's you, because this team still had some work to do. And even with the loss, I want to say publicly, I still like Dan Campbell. I still like Brad Holmes. I still love the fact that they have extra draft picks next year. And I honestly believe that they're kind of building towards next year. So I don't want people to go down the sky is falling route or anything like that. But I honestly think, Bill, at least chatting with some people and looking at some of the banter on Twitter today, maybe people wanted to put the cart in front of the horse, and that's part of the disappointment today.
I think it is, and I just think it's part of the Lions fan psyche. I really do. I think, you know, the way they won last week, and going on the road to a team that they beat last year, obviously everybody remembers that. And it's the passion. It really is. And the Lions, for a lot of reasons, have given the team or the fans of the team something to believe in. We talked about the hard knocks factor. You know, there's a lot of that over the first couple weeks of the season, but now reality sets in. But that's why I think it makes today's game that much harder, because shoulda, woulda, coulda, that's what you started the show with. And it's so true. When you have a chance to win a division game on the road, golly, I mean, you want to grab that thing. And it's almost like two wins because it's on the road and it's a division. But didn't happen. And it'll be dissected. There'll be expert opinion all week. But the players need to deal with it tomorrow and move on and get ready for Seattle next week, right? I think it's Seattle.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the positives from this game because there were definitely a lot of positives. But before we do that, maybe we'll save that for next segment. Okay. Bill, I thought you had a tremendous, tremendous analogy in regards to Dan Campbell and the decision late in the game to kick the field goal, attempt the field goal, I should say, on fourth down.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the flow of the game, right, you examine, okay, the previous time the Lions went for it, they got stopped. And Minnesota got the ball and scored on that possession, okay? So it's late in the game. If you were to play the analytics, you probably would have had an equal opinion as to whether kick the field goal. A lot of NFL kickers are making field goals that long. It's indoors, even though the windows may have been open. It's indoors. It's on turf. I mean, how many college games have we seen field goals that long this year? Seems like a lot. So obviously they know their kicker. They know the distance. They know the expectations. So they gave it a shot. You also, and perhaps even more so in, and I think our opinion, if you have a chance to win the game with the ball in your hands, take it.
Amen.
Take it.
Amen.
And how many times over the years have we said, if you can't gain a yard, it's you're not any good. It's just a yard. Now, obviously, they're paying the guys opposite on the other side of the line. But, oh, my gosh. But I do think the fact that the last time the Lions had a fourth and one, they got stuffed pretty badly. Didn't. So maybe that played into it. I mean, we're still dealing with the emotion of the game. We're still dealing with human beings. And Dan Campbell's unique. I mean, I don't think anybody is. I mean, I ask you, Sean, do you remember Dave Kingman?
Yep, there it is.
Dave Kingman. And all the baseball fans out there that remember Dave Kingman, especially was with the Cubs. You know, our good friend Tim Pendel is a big Cubs fan, and he loved the Cubs during that era. What was Dave Kingman? He was either going to hit it over the ivy or he was going to strike out. So there's really no in between in some respects to Dan Campbell. And you cannot criticize those decisions don't work if you're applauding him when those same type of decisions do work. And today, more of them worked than didn't. Unfortunately, the big ones were the ones that bit the Lions and led to the defeat.
It really is, Bill. I mean, it's a darned if you do, darned if you don't situation. Yeah. But I'm going to piggyback on what you said. I'm a big fan of I'm not going to throw eggs at the guy if you go for it. Because like you said,
right.
I mean, I'd rather if I'm going to go down, let the ball be in my hands.
Yeah.
I want to control my own fate. And that's what was a little puzzling to me because the thing that I think many people, including yours truly, likes about Coach Campbell is he does have that kind of gambler, gunslinger, throw whatever term you want out there approach. And he was aggressive. And then at that moment, at that critical juncture, he decided not to be aggressive. And I think that was something that was perplexing for a lot of us and something that he talked about as well. In case you missed Coach Campbell's comments, we will have them for you shortly. But as I mentioned, he's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Beligian. There are a lot of positives to take out of this game as well. We're going to try to do that. obviously talk about the college football slate as well. That's what this show is all about. It's called Gridiron Wrap, for goodness sake. So we're talking football. He's Bill Keenis. I'm Sean Belegian. So glad you could join us on a Sunday night here on 760 WJR. All right, listen, before we hear from Coach Campbell and his comments on not going for it on the fourth down, always like to let you know what's going on in the late games. Bill, you said during the break, the Jaguars. Yeah. And then some. Big game from Trevor Lawrence. James Robinson with 100 yards. They pound the Chargers out in L.A. 38-10.
I'll tell you what. If that doesn't open people's eyes on the Jaguars to go on the road against a team that a lot of experts, pundits, fans thought had a shot to get to the Super Bowl. It was the Chargers were up there with Buffalo and Kansas City. But holy mackerel, Trevor Lawrence, he's a young guy. He's in his first year with Doug Peterson, and it's obviously paying dividends right now. To me, that's the most impressive win of the day.
Well, you've got Packers and Bucks right now, 14-6, late fourth quarter. What, Bill, 21 seconds left.
Yeah.
Buccaneers are at the 1 yard line. So they have to score and hit the 2-point conversion to tie this one.
Yeah. Yeah. What drama.
Yeah. Rams on top of the Cardinals.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
20-9. Looks like Matthew Stafford is going to improve to 2-1 on the year there. Falcons just kneeled their way to their first victory of the year. They knock off the Seahawks by a score of 27-23. Bill, as you mentioned, Seattle, the Lions' opponent next week. Niners and Broncos tonight, and then tomorrow night, the classic NFC East matchup with the Dallas Cowboys and somehow, some way, the 2-0 New York Giants.
Yeah.
So let us know, Bill, if you have that Buccaneer.
The interesting thing about a situation like this, let's see if it happens. Touchdown.
They got in, huh?
They got in. What I was going to say was, there are situations where the defensive backs are told, take a penalty. Just don't let them complete the pass. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's half the distance to the goal. It runs time off the clock. Because in a situation like that, you have to assume that the Bucs aren't going to risk running the ball with no timeouts and 15 seconds left in the game. So oftentimes, defensive backs, linebackers, whoever is in pass coverage will be told, grab the guy, envelop him. Just don't let him catch the ball. We'll take the half distance to the goal. They're not going to run the ball normally. And then we have another play to do the same thing if necessary. But it's coming down to a 2-point conversion.
Yeah, we'll keep our eye on that one.
Yeah.
Russell Gage catches a 1-yard pass from Tom Brady. So 14-12, 14 seconds left, 2-point conversion fourth coming. All right. We talked about it in the previous break and, it's going to be debated. It's going to be bantied about. It already has all afternoon. Dan Campbell was asked about his decision to not go for it on that fourth down late in the game. You get a first down. The game is over. No doubt about that. This is what Coach Campbell had to say. Yeah, I think that that says it all. You know, Bill, the one thing that people forget, again, it's easy for us after the game, to sit here and play the role of, Monday morning quarterback or devil's advocate, whatever you want to call it. But the one thing that I think sometimes people forget when you attempt that field goal is you're not giving the ball up at the 36-yard line. You're basically handing them another 8 yards as well, Bill, if
you
miss the field goal.
That's a great point. That is a fabulous point. And that's what happened, obviously. It's from the point, the spot of the kick. And the Packers just deflected the two-point conversion pass. So it looks like they're going to win. They're going to go down to Tampa and win.
Wow.
The Bucs had a legal procedure on the first two-point attempt. So it was an 8-yard play, basically, I think. And how about that? The Packers are 2-1 atop the division with the Vikings and the Bears. How about the Bears winning again?
Yeah.
So it's football. There's no doubt about that.
Cards hit a field goal to make it an 8-point game with 1:07 to go out in the desert. So clearly an onside kick is coming, and then they have to score, and then they have to hit a 2-point conversion to tie that game. So it's and not Rams, over yet.
It is. The Rams
it is now.
Covered the, yeah. And Matthew is taking a knee. So the Rams, they fumbled, I think, twice inside the 5-yard line today. So they easily could have had 14 more points, but give the defense credit for causing those fumbles as well.
Well, I think everybody and their brother does the exact same thing that I do each and every week. I love to take a look at what Matthew Stafford did. So I'll get it out of the way for everybody right now. 18-25, 249 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. Had a couple rushes for 3 yards. And most importantly, the Rams win this one to improve to 2-1 on the season. The Cardinals, 1-2. Kyler Murray with a big day, though, had 314 yards passing. Didn't have any touchdowns. But the big, big receiver for the Cards today was Marquise Brown. 14 receptions for 140 yards, Bill.
That's what speed will do to a secondary. He can fly, and that's what speed does.
Yeah. Lions fall again to the Vikings, 28-24. As you mentioned, they are going to be in Seattle next week, looking to get back to 500 against a Seattle team that I guess there's no other way to say it. They are in flux right now. Right. They had their run. And what was it you said last week, Bill? You know what? There are teams that are coming up, and there are teams that are coming down.
Yeah.
I think Russell Wilson knew that the Seahawks were coming down for the last couple of years.
And the Lions cannot think that way going into the game, because I remember a few years ago, and I think all fans will remember this one, the Lions had just, I believe, won 2 in a row. I think it was Green Bay, and then we go down to Miami, and one of the best wins in the Matt Patricia era, went down to Miami and just dominated the Dolphins. We're coming back home to play the Seahawks, and they pounded the Lions. They pounded the Lions. So, you know, the home crowd will undoubtedly help next Sunday. But Seattle was probably looking at this game as a game they can be competitive in as well. So they lost today to Atlanta. I'm not surprised at all about that. I think Atlanta is a good young team. They got to get the quarterback situation settled. But I like the head coach. I like what they're doing. They've been close two other games this year, but they finally got the win today. So it'll be a tough game for the Lions next Sunday.
Bill, I love working with you for a myriad of reasons, but when you bring up those random games, and honest to goodness, you Miami game, I remember plain as day, because you know, Steve and I were doing the post game, and we were watching that, and you know, after the disastrous start to the season, suddenly coming out of the bye week, the Lions are now 3-3, and they just played. I mean, that was a complete game. I mean, that was. Matthew didn't have to put the team on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Kerryon had a big game, as I remember.
He did. He had over 100 yards.
And you know what? And it's amazing how that works out. And, you know, that's the one thing. I think a lot of times people think that, you know, a season is going to be just onward and upward or downward, you know, and it doesn't work that way. There are ebbs and flows. I mean, that's the National Football League today. It simply is, you know, you can't take anything as a given in this league anymore.
No, you can't. I mean, parity is the foundation of the NFL.
Yep.
It's been that way forever, and we see it every weekend. I mean, I mentioned earlier, I think Jacksonville's win at the Chargers is the most surprising game or the most signature win of the weekend. And who would have thought that? Nobody. Nobody. Not even close. Everybody would have expected the score to be around the same, but, you know, not the same team winning. So every weekend we see stuff like this. We do. Yep. And that's what makes it special. I mean, did anyone really think Aaron Rodgers was going to go down to Tampa and win? I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so.
Nope.
And Tampa, you know, except for a late last second touchdown, you know, and Green Bay was another team that fumbled inside the 5 yard line going in. So turnovers are critical, and they could found a way to overcome that today. But Aaron Jones, I think, fumbled the ball in the first half. But kudos to the Packers. And it's, as we've talked about many times, Sean, it's just like your golf game. It's not how, it's if. It can hit the tree, bounce on the green, and go in the puck. In the cup, it's still just one shot. You doesn't got it. Matter how it happens, Sean.
You got that right. Does.
Yeah.
Niners and Broncos tonight. That is the NBC game, 8:20 kickoff time there. And then tomorrow night, as I mentioned, an NFC East classic, Cowboys and Giants. And Bill, for the younger generation, maybe they can't relate to this like you and I can relate to it. As God is my witness, it seemed like every Sunday when the Lions played at 1 o'clock, the 4 o'clock game was either the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Redskins, or the Dallas Cowboys or the New York Giants, or the New York Giants and the Washington Redskins. It just seemed like every 1 and 4 were those, you know, those kind of couple of teams. Yeah. Lions were always the 1 o'clock game. The 4 o'clock game with Madden and Summer always seemed to be Cowboys, Redskins, Cowboys, Giants, Giants, Redskins. You mix in the Eagles a little bit, but I think for the younger generation, we're thinking back to the days of our youth when you see those matchups.
No question. I mean, the 80s into the 90s, you know, the Cowboys, the Giants, the Redskins, and the voice of God, you know, God bless them, Pat Summerall did all those games.
Yep.
And that's when the NFC was exclusively on CBS originally, and then Fox, and the AFC was on NBC. And there was something magical about that. You know, the wind swirling in Giant Stadium with papers flying everywhere and Lawrence Taylor coming off the blind side and sacking Jay Schrader or Joe Theismann or Troy Aikman, whoever it was.
Later,
magical. Yeah, you're right, Sean. That was magical.
No doubt about it. All right, some more NFL stuff to talk about. I want to pick Bill's brains about the college football weekend as well. Also, as you mentioned, Bill, it was a beautiful, beautiful Friday night. You and I were both at games on Friday nights. And unfortunately, I was your game at home? Were you guys at home, Bill, for that one?
We were on the road at Fenton.
Okay, yeah. I was at Brighton and Northville, which was an unbelievable atmosphere just on a beautiful Friday night. So we'll talk that up. Don't you go anywhere. It's Gridiron Wrap. So glad you could join us. He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Bellige, and you are listening to 760 WJR. You know, Bill and I were making conversation in the break, and we just stumbled upon something. And maybe, Bill, we can get some of these high school coaches to start doing this. The only thing I don't like about Friday nights around here is that I can't go to two games. Bill, maybe we could do, we were just talking about the old NFL schedule, you know, the Lions being the 1 o'clock game and then Dallas, Washington being the 4 o'clock game. Wow. Maybe we could schedule like a 5:45 game and then maybe an 8 o'clock game or something, because really, depending on where you live, where I live, I can drive 2 miles to Northville where my daughter goes to school. 2 miles to Novi, about five miles to Walled Lake, about 5 miles to South Lyon. I have a plethora of games, so maybe we can stagger it, Bill, so guys like you and I that love going out on Friday nights, we get a chance to see a couple games.
I know a lot of high school football fans. I know a lot of football fans, period, that would love that. They can't get enough of it. And the high school season is short compared to college and the pros as it is. So, yeah, it'd be wonderful to have more games to be able to attend and just take all that in, you know, just the passion and the emotion. The atmosphere is so unique with the student sections trying to outdo each other. The band, I mean, the cheerleaders, the fans, the parents, and the emotion of it. You know, there's probably not a high school game in this state where there aren't kids crying after the game because of what they put into it and the heartbreak of it. But at the same time, the greatest life lessons are on that field. I've said for years, and I'm biased and I'm partial, the greatest classroom a high school student will ever experience is the high school football field. There's no doubt in my mind. Sports in general, football in particular, there's nothing like it. It's what truly mirrors life more than high school athletics. You're going to get knocked down. Are you going to get up? How quickly you're going to get up? What kind of attitude you're going to have when you get up? That's life.
Yeah.
And that's why we love it. That's a big reason why we love it.
I want you to talk about the game that you're at, because football's pretty big up in that neck of the woods. I mentioned I went to the Northville Brighton game, Battle of the Unbeatens, and it was homecoming for Northville. So, yeah, I mean, they get a good crowd anyway, but I mean, it was absolutely packed. And I'll tell you what, the community of Brighton, I tip my cap to them because I see it in every sport they play. I see it with their hockey team, and I saw it with their football team on Friday. Bill, I'm convinced that three quarters of the town of Brighton just decided that they were going to drive to Northville to watch that game. And it made for such awesome. A special night. Brighton came away with the win, so the hometown fans were a little disappointed. But what a wonderful, wonderful night out there. It's just great to see those places back like that.
Yeah, it's magical. And Holly played at Fenton, their arch rival. I didn't really appreciate how big a rival that has been over the years. When my boys were in the Flint Metro League, it was Lapeer, it was Oxford, it was Linden that were the teams that were Lapeer East, when there used to be a Lapeer East. Lapeer West had a couple good seasons. But now, and my son Billy said after the game, it's really like Michigan, Ohio State for these kids. And the place was packed. They had a wonderful military service honoree show up, and it was what we all hope football, high school sports would be. It was magical. And you know, up where I live, you go a mile south and there's Lake Orion. You go a little north, there's Lapeer. You go a little west, there's Clarkston. You go a little east, there's Rochester. And I heard from a couple of people that the Rochester-Adams-West Bloomfield game, there could have been 20,000 people there the way people talked. And for Adams to just, you know, really dominate that game in the second half, I think it was close in the first half. That's so impressive. But that's the OAA. You have some of the best teams in the state with Clarkston and Adams and Southfield and certainly West Bloomfield. It's great, great, great high school football.
Yeah, that was the talk. I can tell you before our game last night, Wayne State lost to Grand Valley, who Coach Mitchell has one heck of a team. Again, Wayne State is young. And I'll tell you what, when you play a team like Grand Valley, you better bring your A game every single time. And it was a teachable moment, I think, for some of those young players last night. But Bill, I work with a guy who, a former Highlander who went on to play for Wayne State and made it to the Wayne State Hall of Fame, Josh Rennell, and a bunch of his old coaches from Rochester Adams were at the game. And so they all got around and had those big Highlander smiles on their face, kind of talking about what transpired the night before. And, you know, I mean, that's the beautiful thing. And, you know, Boys Bowl, you had Brother Rice and Catholic Central at Lawrence Tech. I mean, that's such a classic matchup. And I will tell anybody, if you haven't gone to one of those games, when that's on the schedule next year, make a drive. That's a special time with those fan bases and those, you know, those proud programs. It really is a great thing. And there's Bill, that's a beautiful thing about high school football. And I can't tell you how much I love, one of the hats I wear is working for state champs, but having the opportunity to go out on a Friday night, whether it be my old alma mater, shout out to Livonia Stevenson, you know, where my daughter goes to school and my son went to school in Northville, just going out on a Friday night, it's just too much fun.
No, it's the best, especially in those communities where it truly is, you know, the town shuts down and goes to the game, home or away. And it's magical. And you get the whole community involved. You go to the coffee shop on Saturday morning and you see the old timers in there talking about the game, win or lose. All the paper clippings are attached to the walls from 20 years ago. You saw some.
Yeah.
And that is just so cool. And it's again, why it's so special and why we're so fortunate. I mean, the support for high school football in our area, Sean, there were probably a dozen games Friday night where the crowds were bigger than a lot of Division II games, maybe even some D1 games.
Absolutely.
Truthfully. Yep. And that's a testament to the school districts, to the people, you know, the people in the communities that know how important that is. It's a unifier. It brings people together. It brings students together, brings the school together. And yeah, as we talked about earlier, I just hope everybody involved, certainly the players, realize that the memories they're making every Friday night are going to be with them for the rest of their lives. Just magical. Just so special.
I'll tell you what. I always used to be of the opinion that the East Side was well behind the West Side in regards to the holiday that Friday nights are in the fall. Yeah. Because it really is special on the West Side for people that perhaps haven't experienced that. Bill, it's catching up here on the East Side. Yeah. This has become a special thing. And, you know, Bally obviously having their game of the week and so many different streams. And of course we simulcast not only what Bally does, but what my coworkers at with state champs do. This is becoming a really big thing. Let me strike that. This is a really big thing now on the East Side.
Yeah. There's no question it is. And I wasn't aware of the JR broadcast, the simulcast, but I leave my son's games and I immediately turn on the game. And in Friday night, it was Brother Rice and Catholic Central. And it's wonderful. And it's great for the kids. It's so good for the kids because that's special to have your game broadcast and family and friends. And with the internet today, you have relatives all over the country listening to those games. And that's, wow, gosh, that's special.
You know, Blake, very quickly, but I know we're up against a break, but I got to ask you because I've confessed to Bill before. I was one of those guys. It didn't click for me until I got into my 30s. Like, it was just like, oh, yeah, it's my alma mater. I'll show up once or twice a year just to, hi, how are you? And all that. It didn't click to me just how important it is to the community and how special and magical it is. You're not that far removed from being out of high school. You're a young, and there's no doubt about that. Do you have that appreciation for that Friday night yet, Blake, or do you think that'll come with time?
So my sister, who's like 8 years younger than me, we went to the same high school, obviously. So I was going for a long time because she was a cheerleader for Richmond, my alma mater, up in northern Macomb County. Yeah. And so I would go every Friday. Now, on Friday nights, I'm generally working overnight, so I don't get to go as much as I would like to. But, no, I mean, there's nothing better, like you guys were saying. Just the atmosphere, and, like, Richmond's, like, one of those towns that everything shuts down on Friday nights, and everyone's at the game. It's the best.
That's awesome. Oh, that's so cool. No doubt about that. Well, I'm glad that you came to that realization a lot earlier than this old guy did. No doubt about that. All right, one more segment. We'll talk some college football and touch on the games forthcoming in the NFL as well. Don't you go anywhere. He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Bellegian. You are listening to Gridiron Wrap on 760 WJR. Boy, Bill, can you bring that stat up again? What was that stat you just brought up?
Remarkable. Just in preparing for the show, I was looking through some of the NFL games, and unless this information is incorrect, which I don't assume it is, in the Dolphins Miami game, or the Dolphins Buffalo game, Buffalo ran 90 plays offensively from scrimmage, and Miami only had 39.
Jeez.
I mean, I've never heard of a discrepancy like that with the losing team running the 90 plays, you know, the majority of the plays. That's remarkable. Miami obviously made their plays count, because I don't ever recall such a large discrepancy like that.
Jeez, oh, Pete. Unbelievable. Hey, listen, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, the two colleges and in our backyard, in the Big Ten, in a game that was heard right here on 760 WJR. Of course, you're home for the Spartans. Bill, it was ugly start to finish. There's no other way to say that. I got a chance to watch most of the first half. I had my own broadcast in the second half, so I had to kind of speed watch it this afternoon. The Golden Gophers got on the Spartans early and just stayed on them, cruising to a 34-7 victory.
Yeah.
PJ Fleck has himself a pretty darn good team. Michigan State certainly left asking some questions of themselves. It's not the sky is falling or anything like that, but two losses like this, and Spartans have to figure it out quick because they're going to be facing a pretty darn good Maryland team as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think maybe for the first time in a long time, Spartan fans would agree that it was a blue weekend. literally, you know, for the football team, because, you know, there were a lot, and they had a huge crowd to start the game. The atmosphere was great. And credit to Minnesota. They just came down here and took it to them. And I mean, what year is this for PJ Fleck at Minnesota? 5 or 6, I think.
Yeah, I think it's is it 5?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's had 2 more years to get his recruits, his program, his foundation built. And you're building foundation incrementally every year. So in some respects, they should have a good team by now. And they do. They have a really good team. And I don't think anybody in the Big Ten would argue that. So, and like we talked last week about Coach Tucker and Michigan State. It's a challenge. It's another coachable moment, if you will, but there's too many of them right now to point at one. They got to have, their best day of practice on Monday and best week of practice this weekend. And again, keep going up that mountain. Don't backtrack, keep going up that mountain and they'll be fine. But it's a challenge, no doubt.
Yeah, PJ, this is year number 6. He's already put up an 11-win season at Minnesota, a 9-win season last year. And I think everybody will remember the success that he had at Western Michigan. He took over a really struggling team. They went 1-11 in 2013, and they went 13-1 by the time 2016 rolled around. PJ knows what he's doing. And in case people don't know, he's very energetic, and I can't tell you how many times somebody has, asked me, is that real? Bill, I don't know if you've ever met him. It's real. PJ Fleck is like that 24/7. It's unbelievable. Yeah. He's really like that 24/7.
Right. I have some friends in common with him. In fact, the friend that PJ spent a year coaching in Tampa with the Buccaneers. And I have a good friend that worked for the Bucs at the time. And you know what? You just put the ball on the tee for me. PJ Fleck is who he is. Dan Campbell is who he is.
Yep.
And there were some detractors, early on in PJ, certainly his tenure at Western. And he didn't change.
Nope.
And Dan Campbell's not going to change either. It takes time. And it's the second year of a program. And even you look at today's game, they didn't have the full complement of their offensive weapons. you know, DeAndre Swift didn't play. I'm not sure what the issue was there, but he only had 7 carries, I think. And St. Brown, I don't think, played the full game.
Yep.
So, and again, I'm contradicting myself by saying to be that close without the full complement is encouraging, at least. But again, every team has to deal with that. It's not when. It's not if, it's when it comes to injuries. And so they'll have to, you know, see where those two guys are for Seattle. But yeah, it's minuscule, the difference between winning and losing.
No doubt. Michigan pulls away from Maryland. You know, the final score is 34-27, but in fairness, Michigan kind of pulled away. They went up 34-19, and, you know, Maryland scored late to make it a little bit more respectable because it really was a dominant fourth quarter for Michigan. But I would say this to Michigan fans, and I heard Chris doing it, and I know Blake is a big Michigan fan. You've come a long way, baby, because not that long ago, and even under Jim Harbaugh, a lot of these teachable moments were during losses, you know, where you lose to Utah or you lose to whomever. It's a testament to where Coach Harbaugh has taken this program that, you know, his talent was able to say, okay, guys, we got to pull away. Let's get our act together and find a way to get this done. And it's good motivation, quite frankly, before they go on the road for their first trip at a place that isn't easy, Bill, Kinnick Stadium in Iowa.
No, and they've had a couple missteps there over the years, as we all know. But like we talked about earlier, the one thing about a running game, and when you rush for 243 yards, I don't care what level it is, that's impressive. And to be able, the running games travel. They travel on the road, and they travel well. And I really am encouraged by that. You know, McCarthy may not have had his best game, but you know what? He didn't turn the ball over. That's huge. No interceptions. And he'll grow from that, from this game, and be better for it. But I like Michigan's chances because they've been there before. I was going to be fired up because of last season. We all know that. They're going to be, I'm sure they probably circled this game on the schedule early in the off season. But I really think with Michigan's ability to run the ball, that's going to give them, you know, a bit of an edge going into Iowa.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. That is one that for all the complaining and I guess rips that people were doing about Iowa, Kirk Ferentz keeps getting that team to come around, doesn't he? It's amazing. You know, this has got to be the end, right? And then they just keep winning.
No, he's amazing. I mean, he's the elder statesman, right, of the Big Ten. He's been around forever and has done a great job, without
no doubt. Bill, it always flies by. Enjoy your week. I look forward to doing it again with you next week, my friend.
Amen, Sean. Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you, Blake.